Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, I'm Tom Gilson. In this episode of ID the Future, we hear from UCLA neuroscientist Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz, who's well known for his groundbreaking work on obsessive-compulsive disorder, neuroplasticity, and the brain. In this segment, originally recorded as supporting material in conjunction with a Science Uprising series, scienceuprising.com, Dr. Schwartz addresses three important questions. Are we more than our brains? Are we really just robots? And does science have what it takes to answer questions like these and all the other questions that concern us most?
Several years ago, I wrote this book called You Are Not Your Brain, which really brings it right home to everyday life. I wrote it with actually another psychiatrist named Rebecca Gladding, who was actually a resident at UCLA at the time when we started writing the book. She was kind of a student of my approach to treating obsessive compulsive disorder for quite a few years before we worked together on that book. And in that book, we have a concept called the wise advocate. And that concept of the wise advocate leads to discovering your true self. So that's where you're more than your brain. I mean, because there's certainly no argument. I mean, I've been doing neuroscience for over 40 years. I mean, and neuroscience really believes that the brain has a lot of effects and does a lot of amazing things. And I certainly believe that too, because, you know, I'm happy to be a neuroscientist. But what I don't believe is that every aspect of a person can be explained by just those brain mechanisms. When you start talking about, on the one hand, having a true self, and that you're making choices about what to focus your attention on to develop that true self, then you get a concept that really isn't in neuroscience, this concept of the wise advocate. So the wise advocate is what we sometimes summarize as your inner loving guide, that every person has access inside of themselves to an inner narrative. And obviously, in various spiritual systems, it could be understood in a variety of ways. And that's fine, too. So the concept, the wise advocate concept, is very intimately related. And in fact, developed by me after many years of study of mindfulness. And mindfulness is something that now everybody seems to know what it is, or at least they've heard of it. They might not know what it is, but they've heard of it. So mindfulness is something that I've spent many, many years practicing and studying. Over 40 years practicing and studying. And mindfulness is basically taking a third person outer perspective on your own inner experience. And another saying or term that I still use sometimes, that I used to use more before the wise advocate concept, comes from the father of modern economics named Adam Smith, who was a Scottish philosopher in the 1700s. And he had a concept called the impartial spectator. And that impartial spectator for him was very important in how people make decisions about what's ethically right and what's ethically wrong. And the impartial spectator was basically, again, sort of the observer, the clear-minded observer, or clear-minded observers in Adam Smith's system, that gives you a perspective on, you know, is this the right thing to do or is this the wrong thing to do? And so in some ways, it's the word conscience has something quite related to it, but it's more than just your conscience, though. It's actually far more than just your conscience, because conscience basically usually is understood as something that's kind of, you know, wagging a finger at you saying, don't do that, do that, don't do that. Whereas the impartial spectator is more observing, and then the wise advocate is really more than that, because we take this description of inner loving guide very seriously. And what we take especially seriously is the notion that you can have an inner narrative with this inner loving guide and talk things over. And it's in the process of talking things over from a perspective of observing sort of where you're coming from. You know, what are you thinking? What are you planning? What are you trying to do? What are you, and then what are your long-term goals? And all of those kinds of questions. Sure, neuroscience has a lot to say about the front part of the brain called the prefrontal cortex and the role that the prefrontal cortex plays in goal-directed behavior. That's straight neuroscience, largely human neuroscience, but honestly, even monkeys you can study that in. But what's not really neuroscience is how do you decide what your goals are? I mean, so once you have a goal, yeah, the brain has a lot to do with pursuing that goal and especially keeping your attention on track of that goal. What neuroscience doesn't have a whole lot to say about is how you choose these goals. But that's really kind of where the you are not your brain concept really has its full richness. Because what we're trying to do is tie an understanding of the brain to help you, every individual person, make better choices about what goals they do decide to pursue. So it helps if you understand your brain to understand how habit center works, to understand how sort of reward mechanisms work, to understand how attention focusing actually works. I mean, one of the things by knowing the front of the brain is very important in attention focusing is don't do things that damage the front of your brain, like too much substance abuse will damage the front of your brain, etc. So these are all, you know, it helps to understand your brain, but what you still need the inner narrative to make decisions and choices about what you actually want to pursue. And that's really where the big part of the you are not your brain concept comes in. Because the mind in this system is choices and decisions that we make about what to pay attention to. And you can almost say that everything except those choices and decisions basically are determined by the brain. I mean, so all your freedom comes in the choices and decisions that you make about what you pay attention to. And all the input largely actually is just the brain. So you have to filter through what the brain is sending into you. And it's in that filtering and in those choices that you make that this whole wise advocate concept, pursuing a true self, becomes very important. And that's what we understand by you are not your brain. If you're just your brain, you're really not very different than a robot. And people who are really dedicated to believing it's all the brain will say, yes, I'm basically just a robot. But a lot of people who think that they want it to all be the brain will go, actually, I don't really want to think I'm a robot. And so then you have to start thinking about, well, what is the difference between you and a robot? Do you believe there's a difference between you and a robot? And if you do, that's when you get into this issue of genuinely making choices and decisions based on your own sort of sense of an inner loving guide connecting with you. The other big argument, philosophical dispute, that you get into with people who think that way is that they genuinely want to be committed to the belief that science can answer every question. So a lot of the cultural battle that goes on is around the issue of whether science can answer every question. And in our current culture, that's a hard battle that is really being fought out every day in the culture at large. So a lot of the difference between the two sides really boils down to, do you think science can answer absolutely every question? And people who really want to believe in genuine choice and want to believe that human beings are intrinsically different than robots do not believe, and I do not believe, that science can answer every single question, that science can totally describe what a human being is. Even though, as a neuroscientist who's had some reasonable success in advancing the field of neuroscience, especially around the subject of obsessive compulsive disorder, I believe that we have shown that, sure, there are brain mechanisms that explain why people have those symptoms, and science can understand why they have those symptoms. Science does not explain very well why some people give into those systems, why some people resist those symptoms, why some people are more, you know, willing to sort of resist those symptoms, why other people don't have the wherewithal to resist those symptoms. I mean, even people who want to say science can answer those questions do not claim that science has answered those questions. So there are a lot of questions that everybody goes, well, we haven't answered those questions yet. And then we're left with the two sides that says science will answer that. And then you have the side that I'm more representative of that go, nope, there are things that science just is not going to answer. I have a name for the people who think that science explains everything. I call them science worshipers. I mean, you know, they have their, and I actually call the belief that science can answer every question a form of a fundamentalist religious belief, because I think believing that science can answer every single question is in fact a form of a fundamentalist religious belief. And not everyone shares that fundamentalist belief. There's lots of people, especially common among, you know, creative, artistic oriented people, and then a lot of just regular people, right? I mean, now a lot, you know, the science people will say, well, that's just because they don't understand science. But I mean, yeah. I know enough people, you know, it's not in this day and age right now, it's no longer the majority of scientists, especially in biological sciences. A lot of people in biological sciences lean toward that belief that science will answer, can answer everything. But that too is an interesting historical development, because there's been many times in the past when scientists didn't believe that at all. And one of my favorite scientists, who I've spent a lot of time in the last couple of years studying, is the inventor of the computer. Blaise Pascal, who invented the first calculating machine. In fact, I'm no computer expert, but I think Pascal is one of the first, if not the first, computer language named after him. No one argues that he invented the first calculating machine. He's clearly one of the great mathematicians that ever lived, and no one denies he was a great scientist. But if you read his book in French called Pensée, which means thoughts, he'll tell you very, very, very clearly that science is very important. Science is very powerful, but there are the most important questions. Pascal says as eloquently as almost anyone has ever said it, right up there near the top. That's why we're still reading him 400 years later, is that, you know, science does not answer the most important questions. And that's actually what I also think. The most important question science does not answer.
We've been listening to Dr. Jeffrey Schwartz, research psychiatrist at UCLA. For more information related to science, materialist philosophy, and what it means to be human, be sure to visit scienceuprising.com. It's a 6-part series with lots of bonus material besides, still being added 2 weekly. Click the page marked Mind for more from Dr. Schwartz and others on this topic. Again, that's at scienceuprising.com. For ID of the Future, I'm Tom Gilson. Thank you for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.